We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and got a great mailbag episode for you today. We are, of course, brought to you by Fantrax. Been a crazy last few days for me. I had my flight home canceled Sunday and got sick at some point along the way, but got the top 400 prospect rankings up on the site yesterday, Tuesday. Got all the ETAs updated, got the team top 20s updated, and then got the top 100 dynasty rankings updated today. Had those kind of ready to go for once I got the prospect rankings done, but then I had to go back through like 5 days worth of pitcher injuries to make sure I was factoring all those into the dynasty rankings update. So I'm working on like a couple hours of sleep right now, but I'm wired. I'm ready to go. We got so many good questions. I'm probably gonna be able to publish the article version of this probably Thursday afternoon or Friday morning. And there's going to be way more questions in the article version. You guys send in so many good ones, so many ones that I wanted to take the proper amount of time to answer. So look for those in the article version later this week. And if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the channel and like the video. And if you ever want me to answer any of your questions, Twitter, the RotoWire Discord, the comment section of my articles, those are the three ways you can reach me. So yeah, I guess let's just jump right into the mailbag. MVola24 had a few questions here to start it off. He says, is there a way to see the last update and see how players jumped or fell? Obviously the arrows, the up down arrows, those are kind of triggered by if you move up or down 10 spots within the top 100, that's one arrow. If you move up or down 20 spots within the top 100, that's two arrows. And then it's a bigger range outside of the top 100 to generate those arrows, but also definitely go to the specific prospects page that you're curious about. And if you scroll about halfway down the page, there's if there's still a prospect, there should be a graph that shows their complete ranking history, and you can see exactly where they've been ranked on every update. If they are no longer a prospect, you can still see their prospect ranking history. You just have to scroll down a little bit further, but very easy to kind of check where I've been at on a specific prospect over the years. Next question from MVola24 says, when can we expect Chase DeLauder of the Guardians this year? I think the Guardians are probably on the Mount Rushmore of cheapest teams in the league. So, I think they will probably do everything in their power to manipulate DeLauder's service time. To get the seventh year of control, that's just keeping him down till April 12th. The Guardians are also maybe cheap enough to keep him all the way down until they think the Super 2 deadline's passed, which is usually around the start of June, which would mean they would have to pay DeLauder one less year in arbitration So basically by early June at the latest, I think, for DeLauder, if the Guardians want to field a real competitive big league lineup before then, I think bringing DeLauder up in mid-April would make a lot of sense. So somewhere in the mid-April to early June range for DeLauder. And then another one from Mviola 24, are the jumps in the ranks for guys like Seidan Rafaela of the Red Sox, Gavin Stone of the Dodgers, and Jared Jones of the Pirates due to them making MLB rosters or something else? Well, it's all kind of one and the same, right? Like they all performed very well in the spring and they made their rosters as a result. And so now any competitive dynasty team that has those guys gets to get value from them kind of at the earlier end of the range of outcomes, right? And, you know, Jared Jones could have flopped in spring training and gotten reassigned to minor league camp in mid-March or something. Gavin Stone, same thing. He could have certainly flopped and been out of the running for that rotation spot. And I don't think anyone would have been surprised if Seidan Rafaela had struggled a little bit in the spring and started the year at AAA. So just all positive data points for those guys. And the proximity matters. If you aren't able to help a fantasy team in April and May and someone else is, then that matters. We're trying to get value from these players. Aaron Wade 2 says, love to see Franco Ailman, Guardians relief pitching prospect, added to the list. 144 is higher than Aaron would have expected for a no-doubt reliever like Ailman. So he says, can you expand on that ranking? Do you see relief ace potential with him? Yeah, I definitely see that with Ailman. He's got the big fastball. He's got just absolutely dominant performance track record last year in the mid levels of the minors. And another thing I really love about Ailman is, you know, we're always trying to figure out who can be the next great closer. And part of that is the job going to be open? And I think the Guardians, for reasons I touched on with DeLauder, will be looking to trade Emmanuel Clase this year. It's certainly next offseason. They're just not going to want to pay Emmanuel Clase in arbitration. So I think that closer job will be open by the 2025 season. And I think Ailman lines up perfectly to just kind of take that job. So he basically checks every box I'd be looking for with a relief pitching prospect. And I added a handful of relievers to the rankings on this one because I spent so much time on that relief pitcher rankings article from about a month and a little bit of change ago. And I just feel very, very kind of comfortable with the hierarchy of relief pitching prospects in terms of like who should be valued, who should be rostered. So, you know, I kind of went into that relief pitching prospect article sort of expecting, you know, Emiliano Teodo of the Rangers to maybe be the top guy, Ryan Kirkering. But Ailman really, really stood out to me. And I love the sort of path to saves for him. I don't really think he'll be challenged in Cleveland if he just kind of holds up his end of the bargain. So yeah, definitely see relief ace potential with Ailman. Paul Max says, what can you tell us about Logan Evans of the Mariners? He showed some good and some bad in the prospect breakout game versus the Padres. So yeah, I did get like a comment on one of the videos I did a week or two ago, just kind of wishing that this version of the update was released a little sooner, maybe in like mid-March. But if I'd done this update 2 weeks ago, 16 days ago, Logan Evans wouldn't have been included at all. And so it would have felt pretty incomplete to do a update mid-spring training. This is a time of year where, like, if you're someone like me, you're getting tips on players throughout the spring, who's looking good, who's looking bad. You also get to see these guys. You get to you know, there's more information than ever about how prospects are doing in the spring. And so that's about 80% of what goes into this update. The other 20% is probably like injuries and team context changing. But to do the update in mid-March would kind of take away half of that 80%. But back to Evans. Yeah, so he was I'll tell you how I first heard about Evans. You know, Saris and I were doing this slow dynasty draft. We were kind of towards the end of the draft, and Eno's always, you know, about me adding hitting prospects when they've got upside. He's very against me adding pitching prospects, but he basically got a text about Evans 2 weeks ago and drafted him in the slow draft without even telling me. He told me after he took him. And so like, that was a pretty big sign right away that Eno, who never wants to roster pitching prospects in this league, just jumped on him as soon as he got a text from someone. And then from there, it just seemed like every day there was just more hype coming out about Evans. So he was sitting 92 miles an hour in college. Now he's 95, 97, touching 99. He also added a sweeper, and he already had a pretty deep repertoire. And he had good command in college, good command in his brief pro debut last year. So there is, you know, I don't really buy the George Kirby comps necessarily, just because like Kirby was a big time prospect as an amateur even before he added a little bit of velocity, just because of how elite his command was. But it is sort of similar to Kirby in that he did add velocity and came in as sort of a pitchability guy. So when someone like that adds 4 miles an hour to the fastball, that's a big deal. As for that breakout game, you know, that was basically the one knock on his spring when he kind of unraveled there. Just for him to even be starting in that game was kind of a good sign of how far Evans had come. So yeah, I think, you know, if you're looking for a pitching prospect flyer outside of the top 100, I think Evans is a really solid ad. And we obviously love the home park in Seattle. I think they have inarguably, you know, top three track record, I guess, in terms of developing pitching prospects. So, you know, everything I'm hearing about Evans is good. We'll see if it actually translates. So this will be an interesting case, because I struggle to recall a guy basically going from unranked to having every prospect writer at a major outlet pumping them up in the span of an offseason and a spring training. So we'll see, you know, if he's as good as everyone's saying he is, and that includes me, I guess. But yeah, very, very fun story. Joe McHugh says, any lean or buzz about prospects who could get the aggressive assignment or skip complex ball, like Sebastian Walcott of the Rangers last year, Jackson Trujillo of the Brewers. I know Joe knows this, but Walcott obviously went to the DSL for 9 games, and then he got the aggressive assignment to the complex league. And I could see Paulino Santana with the Rangers getting the same sort of treatment, going to the DSL for about a week or two and then quickly getting the bump to complex ball. As far as guys that like Jackson Trujillo, who could go for DSL 1 year and then just completely skip the complex leagues and go to single A, I think Yofri Rodriguez with the Brewers and that same org as Trujillo, I think he's a candidate. I think Rainer Arias with the Giants is a candidate. More basically, Arias just sort of seems very physically developed to the point where it might not really be a fair fight for someone like that in complex ball. And then Yoendry Vargas, I guess, with the Dodgers would be maybe another guess for someone that could skip the DSL and go to, or skip complex ball and go to single A. All right, Mookie666 says, I got my claim in for Adam Mazur of the Padres based on the new rank. And just curious what prompted the 50 spot jump. I'd been sort of operating under the assumption that Mazur had been in the sort of low 90s with his fastball, but got some information that he was more kind of at least sort of touching, you know, mid 90s. And Mazur was sort of a projectable college pitcher in the first place. So it's not surprising to me that he's improved the fastball. And so he just, you know, he has a lot going for him. It's definitely starter traits, good team context there in San Diego. So, yeah, I think it's just he's someone that I think is worth rostering in those types of, you know, 200 prospect roster, 250 prospect roster type of league. Okay, let's head to a message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring systems, schedule, Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's FANTRAX.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, home of fantasy sports. It's officially baseball season, and it's time for MLB Best Ball on Rival Fantasy. That's right. Rival Fantasy now has Best Ball. Full season lobbies are live now until opening day with both fast and slow drafts. Then weekly and daily drafts will be available from opening day through the end of the World Series. Best Ball is all the fun of the draft without the season-long management. Enter a league, draft your squad, and the app does the rest. No need to set your lineup or make waiver moves. The highest scorers at the end of the regular season will be the winners. Invite your friends and start drafting for the 2024 fantasy baseball season today. Sign up at joinrival.com/rotowire for a $200 deposit match and $25 in free entries. Welcome to the future of fantasy sports. Welcome to Rival Fantasy. Finally, baseball is back this MLB season. Knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. All right, we're back with the mailbag. JSteen17 says, any thoughts on next year's FYPD class? I've heard it's not very interesting. I've heard the same. I, as longtime listeners should know, I do not kind of wade in those waters this time of year, especially. Just got way bigger fish to fry than worrying about the amateur market right now. I do kind of hunker down. Once I do the next big update to the top 400 prospect rankings is before Memorial Day weekend. And so once I submit that, then it's just full on draft mode, working on my rankings, my pre-writes for all the players who are going to get drafted. So I am not a year-round FYPD follower. I do the draft basically from all of June through the draft, and then I do the big post-draft update. But from what I've heard, it's kind of just a normal class. I think last year's class was a well above average class, maybe even like, you know, one of the best classes since I've been ranking prospects in over 10 years. This upcoming class, it's kind of dominated by college guys. Travis Bazana from Oregon State is the guy that I've heard the most about. I know Charlie Condon is another college hitter to get excited about. There's college pitchers and Chase Burns and Hagen Smith. But it seems like a normal, or maybe even like a C-, D-plus type of class. That can change. And part of why I don't follow it year-round is so much can still change about who's good in a class from like even now until the draft. So, yeah, I don't think it's very interesting. Ross Redkay, other than Great American Ballpark, I assume, what's holding you back on Ty Floyd of the Reds? From what I've read, the fastball is a unicorn pitch, and the secondaries, though not used a ton at LSU, have flash potential and limited use. Do you just need to see him first? So Ty Floyd, I do care about Great American Ballpark. Like that's a not as big of a downgrade as a, you know, if you're a Rockies pitching prospect. Obviously, I don't rank Rockies pitching prospects, but also like Red Sox pitching prospects, not ideal. Cincinnati's definitely not ideal, but you can get fairly high. With Ty Floyd, it's just, yeah, let me see it. I believe the fastball is a great pitch, but like, I'm not going to just assume that the secondaries are going to work and he's going to be great at sequencing all of it. Let's see how it goes. And, you know, if you can earn your way into a fairly high spot on the top 400, even as a Reds pitching prospect. Case in point, Chase Petty. I've got Chase Petty in the top 100 now. So it can be done. But yeah, just want to see it first. Not going to take it for granted that everything's going to transfer great. Chaz Beef, does the complex league schedule moving earlier affect how you're willing to roster the players more likely to start the season there? In the past, you smartly mentioned that if you aren't willing to hold a guy until mid-June, they're not worth adding. Seems like the bar will be a lot lower now. curious if that changes things a bit. So the schedule change that he's referencing. So last year, the two complex leagues opened on June 5th and finished on August 22nd. This year, they'll begin on May 4th and will wrap up on July 25th. So those regular seasons will complete basically just right after the draft, essentially. So I definitely think part of that was just because of how hot it was getting down there. Just kind of miserable conditions if you're in the complex leagues in August. That makes sense to me. But to the question, certainly, because, you know, if you're rostering a prospect and dropping them between now and May 4th, when these leagues start up, you know, that can happen, but that definitely means you're kind of pulling a quick trigger there. You're dropping somebody after about 4 weeks of play theory. So you're jumping on a guy that's performing well at a very small sample. So I'm much less likely to want to drop a prospect in early May than I am in early June. So it definitely matters. I still wouldn't recommend going too heavy on rookie level players. But I think that's very smart to point out that the changing schedule does kind of make that more of a feasible stash game. Aaron Wade too says, can you speak to your rank or outlook on Ryan Burchard of the Brewers? Don't know much about him other than the crazy K rate in college. Are you betting on the Brewers' JUCO developmental history? Yeah, the Brewers are basically the best when it comes to grabbing guys out of JUCO, pitchers out of JUCO. Aaron Ashby, Jacob Mizorowski, Carlos Rodriguez, all JUCO guys. So Burchard, I think he was sitting mid-90s with the fastball, and had two quality breaking balls during fall instructs. I think Josh Norris might have a video of that up on Twitter from fall instructs. But yeah, so Burchard, I think he's got the tools to really break out as a starting pitching prospect, and then he's in the perfect place to kind of maximize those tools. So like the upside with Burchard, and so I slotted him in kind of in the middle of the rankings on this one. Matt L., do you think we see Kobe Mayo of the Orioles as an early season call-up around the same time or shortly after Jackson Holliday with his strong spring training performance, or do you think he will have to wait for some of the logjam at corner infield and DH to clear up a bit? I think it's just going to all determine, and I got a few questions about Mayo, similar questions. It's just all going to be about how's Mayo performing. Obviously, how's Holliday performing? Are those guys like clearly ready for the promotion? It seems like that they would be. Mayo's probably more ready than Holliday. But then how are the guys that are playing over them performing? You know, how's Ryan O'Hearn doing? Are there any injuries? How's Ramon Urias doing? I was kind of theorizing on, I was on the SiriusXM show with Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen earlier today. And, you know, they've got like Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo who are out of options. And I could see Ramon Urias even getting designated for assignment or something like that early in the season if he's not performing that well, as a corresponding 40-man move for them adding a Holliday or a Mayo. So I don't think this is a situation where the Orioles could tell you, like, we're definitely planning on bringing up Mayo around April 20th. But I think they're going to be open to bringing up Mayo and or Holliday starting on April 12th, basically. And I know they said with Holiday too, like part of the reason they sent him down is they expect to face a decent amount of good lefties early in the season. So I know Holiday has not faced many good lefties early in his pro career. With Mayo, Mayo's great. Mayo doesn't really have anything to work on. And I've said before, you know, Mayo's better than Ryan O'Hearn right now. Mayo might be better when you factor in defense than Ryan Mountcastle right now. Certainly better than Ramon Urias right now. And the Orioles know this. The Orioles aren't, they're not doing this like a true meritocracy, but they have to make the pieces on the roster fit. And so you can't just, I mean, you can, but you don't want to just cast off all of your veterans for all your prospects in one set of spring roster cuts. So I think Mayo will be up within the first couple months of the year, but it's definitely a fluid situation. And if, you know, if we get news in like late April that, you know, Ryan Mountcastle's going to the IL with like a serious injury or something like that, I would expect a corresponding move to involve Mayo. Same thing with O'Hearn. And Urias, I think Urias is maybe more of the corresponding piece for Jackson Holiday getting the call. But yeah, just very tough to say exactly when those guys will be up, but April 12th is when they'll have an extra year of control over those guys. Early June for Super 2 purposes, but I think Holiday will be up before early June. And Mayo, I think it's just kind of when are they willing to pull the plug on one of these vets? I'd be surprised if every single one of those guys we just talked about is performing very well in mid-May. Okay. Doc's Dynasty Stash essentially wanted to know why Max Clark of the Tigers isn't a little bit higher. I moved Clark up on this set of rankings. I think I had him just a little too low on the last one. I think I had him in like the mid-40s. Now he's in the late 30s. It's just the power with Clark, you know, very much TBD. I don't doubt the leadoff potential or the stolen base potential, but we know he's not going to be playing in a favorable park for power. So if he's just a guy that in a normal park would be a 15 homer guy, in that park, he might only be a 10 to 12 homer guy. And so we're definitely hoping for Max Clark to kind of tap into more than, 40, 45 grade power. And so I think he's got the potential to finish the year ranked very highly if we see signs of that. Question about a guy I've got ranked one spot ahead of Max Clark. Process over results says Colt Emerson of the Mariners. Does he have a legit shot at a top five-ish or being ranked top five or so next year after graduations? I wouldn't say Emerson has a legit shot. I'd say he's got an outside shot just because he's not super close to the majors, and he's probably not going to run very much. TBD on how much Emerson runs, but like with Max Clark, we know he can run. We know he's 25 plus steals. I would say Clark is actually more likely to finish the year top five than Emerson. But I think Emerson is more likely to finish the year top 20 than Clark. So that kind of tells you where those guys are at. Emerson, I think Emerson's kind of just a four category guy that you hope it's 30 homer power and not like 20 homer power, but the hit tool should be fantastic and certainly a future everyday player. Cream City Prospects has a couple questions here. Is it more likely that Samuel Basayo continues to develop as a catcher or his bat is fast-tracked by a move to first base? Would either of those potential outcomes impact your ranking of him? I would rank Basayo higher if they just came out of nowhere and just said, we view Samuel Basayo as our first baseman of the future. We think he's going to be our everyday first baseman sooner than later. You know, if the Orioles just came out and said that, I would rank Basayo higher. They're not going to do that. I think they envision him being a catcher who also basically it's going to be Basayo or Rutschman at catcher every day. And then whoever's not at catcher is likely going to be at DH that day. But I would rather have a awesome first base prospect than an awesome catching prospect. If you disagree with me, then yeah, I mean, keep pushing Basayo higher, but I don't expect that to be announced or anything like that. So I think just assume he's going to remain catcher eligible and get time at DH when he's not catching. Cream City Prospects, second question was, around what range do you anticipate the 2024 MLB draft prospects to slot into your rankings or the top ones? So yeah, I mentioned a couple of those hitters, a couple of those pitchers earlier. I think they could slot top 25. You know, I think maybe 2 to 3 players from this draft could slot into the top 25. But that's kind of more about just sort of how many quality prospects I expect to graduate from that top 25. So I think there's just going to be spots up for grabs. And at a certain point, you just put someone that is really talented with no pro experience in over someone who has already kind of shown some limitations. So yeah, I think there'll probably be one or two hitters, maybe a pitcher in the top 25 there, but we'll see how it goes. Tom Braun. I'm in the 20th year of my home dynasty league on the pitching side of things. Can you tell me, one, rest of the season, and two, the next 5 years, how do you rank Tink Hentz of the Cardinals, Jacob Mizorowski of the Brewers, AJ Smith-Shawver with Atlanta, and Noble Meyer with Miami? So rest of season, AJ Smith-Shawver, and then a gigantic gap. I don't even – it's possible none of Mizorowski, Hentz, or Meyer pitch in the majors this year, and I would expect that Meyer will not pitch in the majors this year. I don't expect Tink Hentz to pitch in the majors this year. And I think if Jacob Mizorowski does pitch in the majors this year, it'll be out of the bullpen. As for the next 5 years, it would be AJ Smith-Shawver. And then I think, you know, Mizorowski, Noble Meyer, they're right there together. Like I could go either way there. Meyer probably a better bet to be a starter than Mizorowski, but Mizorowski closer to the majors if he has a good season this year. Both of them are candidates to suffer an arm injury at any moment, given how hard they throw. And then a gap to Tink Hentz to round out the order for the next 5 years for those guys. Cam Gustafson, should more guys graduate this year than normal, or does it just feel that way? So graduate the prospect rankings. I think actually last year was the crazy amount of graduations year. But I do think it is trending towards most teams really kind of setting things up for young players to step in to prominent roles than ever before, just because that's how you keep costs down. So I think, yeah, we're going to have a lot of guys graduate. I wouldn't think quite as many as we had last year, but maybe more than you would have had in just a random year 5 years ago. Andrew Mason, are you more likely to rise players faster depending on the org they are in, such as O's or Mariners position players? Would you now be more likely to give Mets pitching prospects a bump now that David Stearns is in the front office, as another example? The Mariners have done a good job drafting and signing position players, but I don't think they've got just an awesome track record of developing position players relative to an average org. They now pitching, like Mariners pitching prospects, like I just talked about with Logan Evans, that'll get you a bump because I know the Mariners know what they're doing there. And but it's also a great home park. And with the Orioles position players, I think at this point, it's kind of a negative to be an Orioles position player. Like, we know the Orioles are gonna find the right guys. They're gonna draft the right guys. They're gonna sign the right guys internationally. But there's just, you know, look at where Dylan Beavers is, Connor Norby is on the rankings. Look at where Samuel Basayo is. You know, Kobe Mayo might be my number five overall prospect in a different org, and Samuel Basayo would probably be a top 25 prospect in a different org. It's so crowded there. That factors in. I definitely trust David Stearns to get the most out of guys like Christian Scott, Blade Tidwell with the Mets, but it's also, you know, a great home park. The depth charts and home parks are more likely to affect my rankings than teams that have a very good developmental track record, because that ends up being, it ends up becoming a negative, like with the Dodgers or with the Orioles. If you're just not a good enough prospect to break in, then you're just stuck at AAA until they trade you. It's more kind of, I would factor it in as more of a, for the big negative orgs, you know, like the Angels, the White Sox, the Royals, the Tigers. Like, there's orgs where it just, I don't necessarily trust you a ton. But the teams that are good at it, it's not as much of a bump. Usually it's more, what's the guy's path to playing time? If it's a hitter, are they going to be playing in a favorable hitting park? If it's a pitcher, are they going to be pitching in a pitcher-friendly park? That type of thing. All right, Peter Turner. Feels like Colt Keith of the Tigers isn't getting as much preseason buzz as typical for a prospect winning a job out of camp. And then he says, like, compared to Jackson Merrill, compared to Victor Scott. What kind of fantasy asset do you see Colt Keith being? I think the reason he didn't get much buzz is because there wasn't really any drama there. He just signed the extension and had a kind of middling spring training, and he's just going to be up. It's not like he lit the world on fire in the spring and generated buzz. It's not like he surprised people and won a job. It was just kind of a foregone conclusion that Keith was going to make the team. Unlike those other guys, I think he's a very high floor hitting prospect. I think he could be kind of a 275 ish hitter with 25 to 30 homer power. I think in a better home park, it could be just 30 homer power, but It's tough to just be a regular 30 homer guy in Detroit. So I don't know if Keith's going to quite get there. So I think you're hoping for sort of like a Justin Turner type of fantasy career from Keith. Maybe not quite those peaks with the batting average, but he could get there. The big thing with him is just, is he a good enough defender at second base for that to just be his spot, and for him to not be bringing errors from the field with him to the plate? Because the rap on Keith forever has just been, this is basically a guy that you want DHing. He can't play third. He can't play second. He can't play first. There's been reports that the defense at second base is better. We'll see on that. So I think that's the big thing to just kind of keep an eye on with him. Is he just holding his own defensively? That'd be great, because then we can just count on him being everyday second baseman for the foreseeable future. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Keith will be good enough at second base that they don't eventually end up having to move him to DH. So that's the big thing to watch with him. But just for average slash OBP, home runs, runs, RBI, Keith's a really good prospect. Mike Genre says, after graduations this year, Walker Jenkins of the Twins is a clear top three guy based on what we know right now, question mark. Yes, I think if Walker Jenkins is not a clear top three guy at the end of this season, or clear top three prospect at the end of this season for the Twins, well, I mean, in all of baseball, but yeah, we're talking about Walker Jenkins here. I think he's the favorite to be the number one prospect in the game a year from now. All the guys I have ahead of him are certainly going to graduate. I would be stunned. So Wyatt Langford's going to graduate. Jackson Holliday's going to graduate, I think. Jackson Churio is going to graduate. Junior Caminero is going to graduate, I think. And Jason Dominguez is going to graduate, I think. And those are my top five prospects. So Jordan Lawler, he's my number six prospect. I think he's probably going to graduate. So Jenkins is just the default choice for number one prospect in the game a year from now. And he could be passed by someone, but if Jenkins is not a top three prospect a year from now, then something, then he would just have fallen quite short of my expectations. Like Walker Jenkins, I don't know, I'm not an expert in the card game, the hobby, but I would just want all the Walker Jenkins Bowmans that I could get right now. Exerson One says, what makes Xavier Isaac, first baseman with the Rays, a top 15 prospect? Well, I just think he's going to be a top five fantasy first baseman for a long time. once he gets into his prime, he just does everything that we want our fantasy first baseman to do. You really have to look hard to find a negative with Isaac as a hitter. You know, the lefty-righty splits are probably the one thing you could, like, look at and say, he's not very good at hitting lefties, but the sample is just so small, and he's so good against righties, I just don't think that's going to matter. I think that was a valuable lesson with a guy like Tristan Casas of just, you know, bet on the really talented, really good hitters, guys that work the count. Like, you just bet on those guys sort of figuring it out against same-handed pitching. And definitely don't make the mistake of looking at Isaac. Like, don't be underwhelmed by the fact Isaac only hit 19 homers last year in 102 games. He's got just insane power. I've had a Ryan Howard comp on him for a while, and that's not a get to the majors at 25 like Ryan Howard, but like that's what the peak production I think is going to look like. Just, you know, 35, 40 homers, really high batting average relative to first baseman, really high OBP relative to first baseman. And he's going to be 20 all season, and I think he's going to get to the upper levels of the minors. So I love everything about Xavier Isaac. He will be a top five to top 10 prospect at the end of the year. I guess the one thing is, he's not going to run. Like, he stole 12 bases last year. He didn't get thrown out at all, but he's a big kid. If he steals any bases for you, I think that's just gravy. Mike Roberts says, best left-handed pitchers 3 to 5 years from now, essentially removing proximity. And then he throws out Ricky Tiedemann, Kyle Harrison. He corrects my pronunciation of the electric lefty in the Yankees farm system, Lalane, Robbie Snelling, Noah Schultz, anyone else. So I think this is just kind of a who has the highest upside question, because I will never remove proximity when I'm ranking pitching prospects. I'm sorry. Proximity matters just so much for me with pitching prospects, not only because they can help your team faster, but because if you're telling me a pitcher is not going to reach the majors for 2.5 years, 3 years, I'm just going to assume something went really wrong in those 3 years. It's very hard to spend 2 to 3 years pitching in the minors and get to the majors unscathed without any injuries, without any command issues or delivery, getting out of sync issues. So proximity for pitching prospects is massive to me. But he's saying I need to remove it. So I'm just going to treat this like an upside question. So I think Lalanne and Schultz, Lalanne with the Yankees, Schultz with the White Sox, and Tiedemann. That's probably the top three for upside, but you know, I think that's definitely not how I would approach rostering pitching prospects. And Snelling, you know, Snelling maybe has the lowest upside on paper of those five, but he's also just such an impressive young pitcher who just keeps doing remarkable things relative to how young he is. I just wouldn't bet against him. And Harrison's breaking camp in a rotation in a great pitcher's part, and he's got a chance to K 200 guys this year. So definitely the one I would want to roster. All right, Gremmy J. Am I the only one who thinks the hype on Wyatt Langford isn't high enough? His combo of discipline, power profile, and max EV look like Pete Alonso with less chase, with 60 speed. Got to see him handle MLB pitching, but I feel a 35 homer season is imminent. First rounder next year. I love this premise. I don't know if the hype is too high on Langford among the people who really believe in Langford, like myself. But just the fact that we've got people out there, you know, saying like Langford is one of my top fades this year, which I got in the comments like last week over something else, and someone said that, and I was just like, whoa, okay. So we don't have full buy-in on Langford yet. So yeah, I think anyone who is doubting Langford is going to look wrong for doubting him, but I agree with everything he said. Like I said a month or two ago that he's going to be a top 10 pick in his prime years. So yeah, I think like you're on point, Grammy J. Others maybe not so much. Neil Comer, does Dylan Cruz bad spring trouble you at all? I don't really care what like Dylan Cruz did in the spring that much. What he did at Double A last year, it troubled me a little bit. And I think it's pretty clear if you've been following the way I've been ranking the first year player draft guys, like I would consider myself one of the lower people on Dylan Cruz. And I think he could fall a decent amount on the rankings this year. I'm not going to bump him out of the top 20 until he actually deserves it based on what he's done in a couple months worth of games at Double A. I just think his amateur track record deserves a bit more patience than that. But I never really considered bumping him like into the top 10 or anything on this update. I think he's closer to outside the top 20 than inside the top 10. Because I don't really see – I think like Dylan Cruz's upside it is kind of it's like good. It's good version of Seiya Suzuki, sort of. It's not, and good version of Seiya Suzuki was awesome last year. I drafted a lot of Seiya Suzuki in drafts for this year, but like he's not. I don't see Dylan Cruz being a 35 homer guy or a 20 steal guy or a 300 hitter. I think his best stat is probably going to be OBP if it all comes together and runs scored. And then he's got a nice park to max out at, you know, 25, 30 homer power, that type of thing. But like I've been kind of fading Cruz relative to the market for a while. So Leo Kelser says he got some favorable notices in Nats camp, but are you viewing Trey Lipscomb as mainly a utility infielder given the ranking? Or is there potentially more there? Do you think he takes the second base job this season? Yeah, so I added Lipscomb at 325 on the ranks. Honestly, I could have ranked him higher than that. I think on a lot of teams, he would not even really have a chance of getting significant playing time in the majors early this season. But the Nationals are not a lot of teams. They are going to have playing time available. You know, Luis Garcia is the incumbent at second base. Looks like Nick Senzel is lined up for some steady work at third base. So, you know, Joey Meneses at DH. There's plenty of avenues for Lipscomb to crack in there as an everyday player. So, I think he's going to benefit from the team context in terms of playing time in the park. And few guys had a louder spring training sort of out of nowhere than Lipscomb. So that got him out of the ranks. I'm not capping him at utility infielder. John Taperzer, thoughts on Wickelman Gonzalez of the Red Sox? Yeah, just I've talked to a lot of people this offseason that think Gonzalez is a reliever. He's got just crazy good stuff, but you know, he needs to take a step forward with the command and control this year. But you know, I think he's also got a chance to be the Red Sox long-term closer potentially if the command doesn't come all the way around. But yeah, he's just, yeah, you know, I fell in love with the stuff last year. Tough guy to rank. I think it's kind of, I'd say 60% chance Gonzalez is a reliever, 40% chance he's a starter. So that's kind of where we're at there. Finn, is Jacob Mizorowski a starter or reliever? So I said 60% chance for Gonzalez being a reliever. I'll say 45% chance for Mizorowski being a reliever. But I think he even more safely than Gonzalez would profile as a closer if he had to move to the bullpen, Mizorowski. So, yeah, couple guys with some stuff to work on this year in Gonzalez and Mizorowski. Scott Corlander says Felnin Celestine was touted as the best in his international free agent class by many. Do we think any less of his talent now, or are we just waiting for data? How does his profile compare to some of the top international free agents from this year? So the big thing with Celestine is just the hit tool. Like, you're very, you know, you kind of got to read between the lines with the way people talk about the international guys with the hit tool. But, I always sort of got the sense that we were talking about kind of like a 45 hitter with plus speed and plus power with Celestine. And so when they're that significant questions about the hit tool, I want to see how it actually translates. You know, like sometimes these guys get into games and it's just like, oh, you can't hit at all. I don't expect that to happen with Celestine, but I also just, you know, I got him at 129. If he makes contact at a solid clip this year, he will certainly finish the year inside the top 100. But there's a chance he could finish the year outside the top 200 as well. In terms of guys that he compares to, I think very similar actually to Dowell Joseph, who the Mariners signed this year. So I have Joseph one spot ahead of Celestine just because he's a year younger and basically it's the same tools. So yeah, I think this is Celestin is someone I can't wait to see how he does in this first, 6 weeks or so this year. All right. Got one more for you and we'll wrap up the pod version. Scott Corlander, does Nick Nastrini of the White Sox have the command to stick in a big league rotation? I think he's got the command to stick in a bad big league rotation, which the White Sox are. He's going to be a high whip, high strikeout starter if it all comes together. Like a guy where you're getting like a 1-3-2 type of whip, 1-3-4 type of whip with over a strikeout per inning. Like that's kind of what you're hoping for with Nastrini. And obviously you're not going to be getting a bunch of wins anytime soon with the White Sox there. So the other thing is with guys on teams that are this bad, like they're not going to pull the plug on him as a starting pitcher anytime soon at all. They're going to give him every chance to figure it out. And then Scott said, same question, but for Joe Boyle of the A's, only more so. Joe Boyle, a lot of what I said when the Nastrini sort of applies, like the A's are going to, especially after what he showed in those, he had three okay starts in the big leagues when you factor in the opponents, but he didn't walk many guys. And then he had three really good starts for the A's at AA as well. And he did a decent job of suppressing the runs at AAA, even with the automated balls and strikes. All this after the trade, right? Like he was just, not a starter at all based on the numbers with what he did with the Reds. Boyle, he walked 15 batters in 18 and a third innings in spring training and still made the rotation. So that tells you about the A's depth chart and about Boyle's control. I can't touch him. I'm not going anywhere near him. Again, I think they'll keep him as a starter as long as they possibly can, just because it's the A's and they don't have anyone else, or they don't have anyone else with Boyle's caliber stuff, but yeah, I would just bet against him throwing enough strikes. And I think he's just the whip issues with a guy like this and just the massive blow up potential on a per start basis with someone with this poor command. Just I have no interest until like if he fixes it all, then I might be interested the next year, but I'm never gonna buy in on someone like that based off of the limited sample we got from him throwing enough strikes last year. All right. Cool. Well, that does it for the pod. Brought to you by Fantrax, as always. And I'll get the article version of this up as soon as I can, probably Thursday afternoon, maybe Friday morning. We'll see. But definitely appreciate all the great questions. Appreciate everyone that checked out the top 400. Subscribe to RotoWire if you're not already, please. Like the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And have another pod next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.